Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 205. Kevin Wheeler is somewhere with dinosaurs. That's all we know. He is on vacation, and he sent us a strangely immature kid picture of a dinosaur and said, roar. So that's all we know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an animatronic dinosaur thing.
Where is he? We don't really know. I mean, what city? Give me a state.
Yeah, oh, wherever okay. They have dinosaurs still. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Somewhere where dinosaurs still roam the earth. He might. I guess he's at Jurassic. He's at La Isla Nublar or whatever.
So Sue is hanging out with us for an hour. I think I even remember studying this in college, but they've done more studies, and it comes out the exact same way again. The happiness curve, have you seen this?
Mm-hmm.
Based on age. So if here, I'll just draw it for you.
Thank you.
It's just basically this.
Oh.
And so,
it's like a smile.
It's like a smile. It's the U curve. And you are at your happiest when you're about 15, and then when you're about 90.
That's interesting.
And you hit your low at about 45 to 50.
Huh.
And then it slowly starts getting a little bit better. And then it accelerates when you hit 70 and gets much better quickly.
Do you think then that that's just about you're 15 and then suddenly you have responsibilities and you go down, 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 down. Then you really have to make money. And then as you retire, you kind of give it up and think,
yeah. I think that's exactly
wow.
it.
Wow.
And I think there's a certain amount of, I've done what I can do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know. Yeah. I'm sure that's true.
I think this is going to sound very dramatic, but I think I'm in my valley right now because I think I was very immature and didn't grow up very quickly. I've been working really hard for a really long time, but I just sort of Peter Panned it. And I was thinking last night, and there's no way to say this without it sounding like I'm bitching and moaning, and to some extent I am, but I get so tired of everyone's happy horse crap online and, you know, Instagram and Twitter and TikTok, and I'm just killing it, and look at this, and look at my abs, I got a 12-pack, that sometimes you need a little bit of reality. And I've always done that over my 24 years. Here is my night last night. So the total sandwich generation. And I started a little late, had Phoebe when I was 40. But I've got Phoebe, who's home from college, going back as a sophomore. It's not like she's going back as a senior. I still have 3 years of college and maybe law school and then boyfriends and getting her heart broken and all that stuff. And my mom, of course, in the nursing home and dealing with dementia. And she called me twice last night. And it was like getting the worst prank phone call you've ever had because she was out of it, but they dialed the phone for her because she can't do it herself. And she was yelling and saying, I heard on the radio today that you were dead. And I've been worried all day, and it doesn't even sound like your voice, and I don't think this is you. And I'm like, Mom, it's me. Well, what did you do all day? You weren't here. I was there in the morning. I was there in the evening, and I had to work in the middle. No one should have to go through that.
Mm-mm.
No one should have to go through that.
Mm-mm.
And you certainly shouldn't have to go through worrying about your 19-year-old daughter, worrying about your 97-year-old mother. But that's what it's like being in your 50s. And looking like in my 60s, you know?
Do you guys, I'm sorry.
Are you believers in the midlife crisis? Do you guys think that that's a real thing that people can have? Or do you think that's maybe just the bottom part of the curve?
Here's the way I've always explained, because midlife crisis has become a cliche. And it can mean many, many things. It can be a positive thing that you sort of wake up one day and you say, oh my gosh, I'm doing something I don't want to do. I'm in a relationship I don't want to be in. I'm in a job I don't want to be in. I'm this, I'm that. I'm going to change my life. Or it can be the goofy, stupid stuff. I've always, and you guys have heard this analogy before, I always analogize life to a day at Six Flags. The thing about when you're a kid and you'd get there at 10 in the morning and it closed at 8 p.m. and being in midlife is being like 5 p.m. and you've had your lunch and you just finished your funnel cake and you only have 3 hours left. And then you go, crap, I have 3 hours left and I want to ride the log flume again. And I want to go to Miss Kitty's saloon and I wanted this and I wanted that. To me, it's like a reshuffling of priorities that I had this long day at Six Flags, and I kind of wasted some of it. I followed that girl around who I thought was cute, and she wanted nothing to do with me. And then I let my friend talk me into the Screaming Eagle, and I threw up. And now I'm going to, damn it, I'm going to do Six Flags the way I want to do it. I think that's my analogy to, like, a midlife crisis.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought a sports car in there, that'd be even better.
Well, you know, it could be, like, here's what I'm going to do. I have $10 left from the allowance I got, and I want a bullwhip, and I'm buying
right,
a bullwhip.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. That's going to make me cool.
I think the good
news. Which it would.
Yeah. Sure. Try again with that girl with the bullwhip in hand.
Hey.
But I think that if you are one who wakes up, then that is a positive, right? If you wake up and think, you know what, how can I look into myself and become better with, since it's 5 o'clock and I've only got till 8, how can I improve myself? How can I be a better person? Then I think you're fine. But if you don't do that and you're not introspective, then it would not be good.
What, based on your life experience and your friends and your family and yourself, would you say it's the majority of people have that 5 p.m. at Six Flags wake up moment?
Oh, that's a good question. I think a lot of people, it's easier not to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people
just run out the clock.
It's very hard to, I think for anyone, it's very, no matter where you are in your life, it's very hard to look at life as finite, more so your own than anyone else's even. It's very hard to look at that and think like, no matter every wasted evening, every, you know, time you sleep in an extra 4 hours or whatever. Like, I mean, that the clock's ticking.
But then you also, I think, because I've gone through that, because I do a lot of sitting on my couch watching old reruns of Ancient Aliens, and I think you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
We're not all going to go to Paris all the time, and we're not all going to see the pyramids twice a year.
And that's the tricky part of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, once you come to terms with that part of it, like that you can't have a life of constant adventuring, then it's like, well, how do I while away the time in a worthwhile way?
I told you my story about Dr. Ken Rubicki, my friend and doctor who created Neovitin, and he survived pancreatic cancer, which has a less than 1% chance of survival. And he said to my wife and I, said, we're going to live for today. We're going to do everything we've ever wanted to do. We're going to make the most of every day. We're having breakfast in the West End. I'll never forget it. And I said, how long did that last? And without hesitating, he said, 1 year.
Oh, that's interesting.
He said, after 1 year, we were exhausted and we just went back to living like normal people.
Because I think it's not so much about travel and what can you cram in, but how can you find meaning?
Yeah. And even if that is just sitting on your couch watching Ancient Aliens, if that's something that makes you cozy and something that enriches your life, like that can be just as valuable as travels or whatever, you know, like it's about appreciating the little things and just squeezing as much as you can out of the moment. It's not about like maximizing, like, oh, we've got to go, we've got to do this, I've got to become this person. Because the thing is, whenever you try to like level up, you spend so much time failing before you reach that next level.
Yeah.
I don't blame people sometimes for not wanting to take that step.
Well, two, it depends on how you spend your days or your work time. And for us, this is a great job, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it's hard, you know? And it's difficult to prepare all the time and then do a four-hour show and try to be entertaining and funny and pithy and informative and not boring and not stupid. So that, believe it or not, when I'm off work, I'm not looking to entertain.
Yeah.
Oh, I get that.
Oh, yeah.
I get that, too. Sometimes I'm not the most extroverted person in the world, and sometimes this job can be like a little emotionally exhausting. And so a lot of times I just don't want to talk whenever I get off work. I just need like a solid hour of nothing to just kind of recharge.
This was interesting. I love philosophy and I love studying different religions. And I was, God, it sounds so pretentious. I was reading a book about Buddhism last night and they were making the point. I don't really subscribe to that we're reincarnated over and over again until we get it right. But I like the concept. We can all relate to that, like my Six Flags analogy. But they were talking about that they believe that you have to be very careful judging people because you judge them based on how much they've grown and how much they've changed and how much they've awakened. And some people have lived many, many lives and grown exponentially, but then they choose to have what's called a resting life. You ever notice that there are some people who just sort of slide by and buried for 50 years and they
seemingly fine with it?
Yeah.
You know, seemingly this is what I've planned.
I think I want one of those next.
I think it's valid. I think that's a valid way to live your, you know, I think a life with, I think what you're describing is maybe a life with little risk involved, right? Maybe lower highs, but also maybe higher lows. You know what I mean? I think that's a valid way to live. A life of lower risk where it's like, yeah, like you're not going to, you know, have the winning the lottery style elation, but you're also, your worst days are still going to be pretty darn good. I think that's hard to argue with.
Well, like Amy was talking about in the first hour, it's only in the last maybe 100 years that try having this conversation right in 1600.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, everyone would be like,
shut up.
Put some
I'm going to drown you
fire
in this poop water I just made soup out of.
Right.
So, yeah, sometimes it's just...
Oh, your feelings hurt.
Yeah, too much time on your hands. Too much time to think because you're not working in the coal mine 18 hours a day.
Well, and it's so much of it is ego of like, oh, I have to have this life because I'm meant to be something. And it's like, maybe you're not. Maybe you're not. Like, I'm not trying to be rude. I've kind of come to that conclusion about myself. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just want to be happy. I don't have to reach some sort of... I'm not special, you know? Like, there are billions of people on this planet. There's nothing about me that means I should have some sort of extraordinary life. I just want to carve out a little place for myself.
It's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I've kind of always, that's always been my goal. And I think I've suffered from that a little bit because I think I've suffered a little bit from like a lack of maybe direction or a lack of really, like my goal was always, I just want to be happy. But it's hard to know what that is, right? Mm-hmm. It's if you, when you decide that before you decide maybe what it is that makes you happy, I always feel like I suffered a bit from like that sort of lack of direction of like, you know, things have gone fine for me. I think I've had a really great life so far, but it's you're like, okay, but what does that mean? how do you do that?
Not to poke you because it's way too soon, but we're having this talk. Mm-hmm. Losing your mom, did you have any moments of, wow, this really does end?
Yeah, every moment for the last 2 weeks, pretty much, you know, and how fast it can happen, too. You know, I mean, this time, exactly this time, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was like thinking that she would be okay. I was thinking that she would be fine. We were looking forward to her getting a transplant, which it looked like it was on the table for her lungs. And we thought, you know, this is everything's going to be okay. We had felt a lot of optimism. She didn't seem to be getting significantly worse during the time that she'd been in the hospital. And within, you know, I mean, within just hours, the whole thing changed.
I know someone who is in remission from cancer. And about 8 years ago, was only given 2 years to live. And it was one of those that every test they took came out the worst it could be. Mm. And, you know, when you take a test, whether it's simple blood test, I was at my doctor today, whether you take a simple blood test or it's a biopsy, whatever, you somehow know it's going to be okay. And then it isn't always okay.
Yeah.
And then you have to just deal with that.
And you have to just deal with it.
24 at DGS. Sue and Andrew were just talking about City Museum and some of the cool architecture from St. Louis. And this is going to go against what I was about to say. I had a bunch of TikToks last night, which were very cozy, which is what I'm trying to do. So I'm trying to get rid of all the child boxing in my feed. Mm-hmm. So I'm lingering on anything that's cozy. And they had a lot of like Baroque art and churches from Europe. And it made me mad because I'm like, why are we just lazy? Have we lost our artistic flair? Like, why don't we make beautiful things anymore? Maybe we do, and I'm just not engaged and I don't know it.
I think it's just cheaper to build everything the way that it's...
Everything is mass-produced now. We don't have...
artisans and craftsmen. And,
well, we don't have the... Or those people are now devoted to finding how do you make a situation where you can make an entire neighborhood worth of condos and townhomes in less than a year so that people can move in. We have people who we just don't have time to build.
It's interesting you say that, because I guess it was probably the 50s when we got into the prefab houses. And before that, I guess they didn't even have the conception of that. They were just like, oh, I'm building this house. I'm going to build it the best I possibly can. And maybe I'll be lucky enough to get another one.
I sold a condo in Clayton. It doesn't actually close. Don't let me jinx myself until Friday. But it was built in 1925. And it's a series of condos, and it is a five-bedroom, two-bath. And you walk up on the second floor. I don't even know how to describe it. The building is just so cool and original. And to have a two-story condo within an old building, and all the woodwork, and there are coved ceilings in there, and there are it's almost like they've tried to make every room architecturally interesting. And it's just a really cool thing to see, but you've got to go back in order to find that kind of work.
Yeah.
It's a cool place.
Yeah, I guess it would be prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, and just, you know, you don't have the time anymore, you know, that when we're used to things going so fast, we don't have the time to make I'm going to make this church and I'm going to spend... You know, I'm gonna spend my whole lifetime, and then my son that I'm also teaching how to sculpt stone is gonna spend his whole lifetime.
I found something really cozy on TikTok: candy making.
Ooh,
where they pour like a big bunch of hot peanut brittle, and they smooth it all out, and they let it cool, and they cut it with scissors.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome.
My life, baby.
Or you watch them like pull the taffy and stuff.
Easy, brother.
And twist it.
I know what you're talking about.
Yikes. You're problematic. On and off the air. Welcome back, guys. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. Good afternoon. How are you?
So we were just discussing you. We have Sue Thomas here from 97.1. She's a big fan of yours. And she's like, oh, my God, he's the nicest man. And I'm like, yeah, he's a real peach. I've never had to deal
with
it.
Everybody says. Everybody says when they think they know me, but then, you know, it gets worse.
Like, I've never had to deal with people going like, Glover, what a wonderful man. Like, is there added pressure that like, oh, I have to be nice to these guys now?
Well, you know, I have learned that I'm actually an introvert that plays an extrovert on TV and radio. So I heard you guys talking about it last hour about needing some time to kind of regenerate and rest. And I'm kind of like you guys.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of us out there. You know, like it's pretty classic. I've met so many stand-up comedians over my career, and I've yet to meet one that wasn't a complete mushroom when the mic was off. And I'm kind of like that, too.
Yeah, well, except that you're a sit-down comedian, I guess, if you're actually doing radio. But you're a funny guy, too, but you're on. That's the difference. And, you know, I think anybody that's in kind of that kind of role, I mean, you realize that, you know, part of what you're doing is, I mean, like in your case, entertaining, and in my case, I guess the same, and trying to speak in complete sentences. And you know, I hope I can do that without, you know, straining too much. But the point is you're on to do that. And then there's just time that you just kind of chill. In fact, chilling is what the Cardinals are doing today. Here's some scoop for you. It's kind of a show and go day today at the ballpark. So a lot of the players are going to come in late, and they're going to, it's what we used to do in the minor leagues where, hey, just get the uniform on and go. Huh. Don't be here 4 hours before the game. So I'm actually at the ballpark, and I'm kind of by myself, which as an introvert is not all bad.
That's really interesting. Is that just sort of a, hey, fellas, don't overthink it too much today. Let's just get in there and play ball.
It's hot. They just had an important game yesterday against Baltimore, and I think you just have to pick your spots to do that. And I think they've been going hard, and I think it's just a smart thing to do every once in a while, no matter where you are. And the minor league teams used to do that all the time. And it's part of our survival.
Rick, one of the things I love about baseball, I love the lore. I love the rules, the unspoken rules. And the other day, so last night, Sonny had a no-hitter going into the fifth inning. Yeah. Of course, you don't mention it because that you can't do that. But I noticed you mentioned it the other day when it was our opposing pitcher. I didn't even know you could do that.
Well, I'm not sure you can. I just did it anyway.
Okay, all right. That clears
I'm
it
not
up.
Nearly as nice as you think I am.
No, you weren't nice to that guy.
Pick my spots, and I actually said that. I think I said that on the air. It's like, you know, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to do it with the other team, but what the heck? I mean, I kind of want to. If I break it up, then you're welcome.
Yeah.
So, but the other unspoken thing that happened with Sonny's game yesterday is Cedric Mullins tried to bunt in the sixth inning of a no-hitter. And my comment there was, you will not find a hitter that says that's wrong to do, and you won't find a picture that says that's right to do.
Gotcha.
So I guess it's everybody can decide for themselves.
So it's just kind of a cheap move, you think, kind of?
Yeah, well, it's an unspoken thing that you have to earn your way on. I say unspoken, but it used to be unspoken, and maybe somebody forgot about it. But the point is, you don't want to have a bunt single to break up a no-hitter. It just
right.
seems cheaper. It seems like you're... Yeah, it almost seems selfish in a way, and you know, I'm not sure it is selfish, but it's just again an old school baseball thought.
Well, yeah. You know what? I was there, and he got booed. Everybody booed when that happened.
He did, and actually, what I really centered on was the fact that Cardinal fans are paying attention.
Yes,
they
yeah.
absolutely know what's going on, and they booed. I mean, there was not a split second later where there was a whole bunch of people booing him.
So Wheels told a story the other day, a little anecdote that I thought really summed up the Cardinals last month, that he said that there was some stud, I don't know who it was, you would know who it is, I forget, but Ted Williams, when he was still alive, the guy was slumping, and he took him out to a field and was helping him with his swing, and Yastrzemski happened to be there, and Yastrzemski yeah. said, "Don't worry about it, kid, just swing as hard as you can in case you hit it." And who knows what has awakened the bats of the Cardinals. But yeah. sometimes I think, we kind of talked about this with Goldie the other day, forget what you've learned and just go back to when you were 12 years old. They seem to just be gripping and ripping, and it's working out.
So we asked Ollie that question yesterday. Is there anything different in terms of preparation or process or, you know, more work, less work, you know, less stats, whatever? He said, honestly, it said it's just time. Guys needed time to get out of where they were. And he said there is a bit. One of the things he pointed out is, you know, when your stars aren't hitting, sometimes that has an effect mentally on everybody else. Because if you and I are on a team and Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt aren't hitting the pitcher, you and I are thinking we got no chance.
Right.
I mean, no chance, because our stars aren't. And I think that's probably at least a mental factor in all of this with the young Cardinal hitters. But fortunately, they seem like they've worked out of that.
You know, and we have some guys who I don't think are getting the credit they deserve, like Ciani. He has been yeah. great offensively and defensively.
Yeah, he's been great. Mason Wynn has been very steady and one of the best rookies in the National League. Yvonne Herrera, I mean, when Herrera and Burleson come to the plate, I think they're going to get hit.
Me too.
I'm kind of casually saying I think they're our best two hitters right now. And I know we've got great, you know, pedigree at the corners, but I think right now, game on the line, I just assume Burleson be at the plate than anybody.
You know who I love? I love Kittredge. I love his windup. He just stands there and then he yeah. just throws the ball.
He picks up his leg and he pauses, and you're kind of waiting, and you think about that maybe throwing off the timing of a hitter that thinks he's already started his windup and here he comes, but yet that split second and of anticipation, it seems like it just freezes guys. And by the way, his slider's nasty.
Yeah, I really like that guy. Who else has really picked it up lately that we may not have noticed?
Well, you know, I think John King and Ryan Fernandez are both doing good jobs in the bullpen. They're kind of, you know, Ryan Fernandez was a guy that we took out of AA. I mean, this is a guy that had no big league experience, and he has really handled the pressure of some tough situations really well. He's got good numbers, and John King is not an overpowering guy, but you saw Ollie yesterday use him late in the game. I think, you know, there's something to be said for a left-hander that gets ground balls. I hope there's still something to be said for that, because I represent that union, and John King, to me, is if he just keeps doing what he's doing, I think he'll certainly be a big asset to him.
And I understand one of my old alma mater guys at Wash U has been called up to the Cardinals. You don't see a lot of Wash U guys in the show. This is cool.
The last one was Dal Maxville,
wow.
the last Cardinal who went to Wash U, and Dal was a engineer. So here's Ludo's. He's got the high bar now, because Maxville not only was a player, but became a big league coach,
mm-hmm.
And also a general manager. He was the general manager when I played here in St. Louis. So I guess, you know, the Wash U degree might come in handy for some things down the road, too, for Ryan Ludo's.
So I keep seeing that Sonny Gray took himself out last night, or tipped Ollie yep. that he needed to come out. Well, I didn't yep. see that. Walk me through it.
Yeah, well, he did, and I saw it live, and I said that there was some mound presence things that said that he was done, but specifically, I wanted to check on the video to make sure I saw what I saw. But he did. He motioned for Ollie, come take me out. And he said specifically after the game, I was done. I was gassed.
Wow.
And I didn't feel gassed at all going into that inning. But the fact that I had to throw so many pitches in that inning, I was out of bullets. And he seemed like he was. When he pitched to Santander, it seemed like he got away with pitching to him. And he was searching for ways to get him out, which he did, to his credit. but you could tell that there weren't many pitches left in his arm.
And Rick, walk us through that. We all can relate to being too tired for something, but none of us can relate to being on the mound in an MLB game. When you start to get too tired, you start to get gas, you start to bunk, what happens to your delivery?
Well, what happens is you're not in sync, and then maybe your arm drags or your body is late, and so in your motion to the plate, and with the arm drags, and then you're pushing the ball, you try to throw it hard, and it just doesn't come out of your hand. Everything when your swing is right at the plate, or when your golf swing, I mean that's a good example. Mm-hmm. When you're tired, you're not timed up right. You can be timed up wrong as a pitcher too, and fatigue can have something to do with that. And you don't have a lot of time to step off at the back of the mound, call a timeout, and say, "Hey, I need the chance to regroup here." That's a hole in the pitch clock. In my mind, is they have to give a pitcher a timeout. They just need to give him one an inning. Mm-hmm. I think that would have helped last night.
Yeah, I agree. Last question. So tonight's a big game. We win this one, we can win the second series in a row, and against the Orioles, that'd be a big deal.
It would be. This is a very good Orioles team. They've got a lot of good young players. They're a fun team to watch, frankly. In fact, that the Cardinals played so well yesterday was great. And, yeah, you win a series against the Orioles, you're making a statement that maybe we're a different team than everybody thought we were 3 weeks ago.
All right, buddy. Have a great call tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
It's 244, brought to you by FIRA Capital Management.
49 DGS coming up in 1 hour. We'll have the Think Tank with Alvin Reed and Kurt Barr. Dave Murray's at the bottom of this hour, 3:35. Common piece of advice that were stupid and no one should have ever followed them. Don't go to bed angry. We've all heard that one, right?
Yeah.
Having a fight with your significant other. The now common approach is that you're so much better off going to bed, getting some sleep, get something to eat, rest, get space between you and the fight, and then in the morning everything's going to look clearer. But if you stay up and you keep trying to talk it through, you're probably just going to dig yourself a deeper hole.
I can see that. I really can.
I'm the kind of person, though, where I can't really relax if I'm mad or upset. Like I have sleep problems anyway, so I'm like, all right, the old adage says, let's figure this out.
Problem is when you have one of you and one of these.
Yeah.
Because that person's like, yeah, I'm just going to go to bed.
Oh, when your significant other can just fall asleep in the midst of anything? Yes.
Mm-hmm. You have that going on?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My mom, with all of her issues going on, we were talking about that the other day because she was having trouble sleeping, and I said, yeah, Dad never had that trouble, did he? And she's like, oh my gosh, his head hit the pillow and he was asleep and it made me so mad for 70 years.
He could probably sleep in cars too. My brother would do that. We'd pull out of the drive for family vacation. He was out a block away and I'm up for 6 hours going, are we there yet? Are we there yet?
My dad said it was from being in the Navy in the war. That you had to be able to sleep standing up, or you have 10 minutes and you would have to get a nap. And so
take it where you can.
The other thing, never give up. Sometimes if something isn't working, you need to just let it go and move on to something or someone else.
I agree with that. And especially like if it's like I've been playing tennis lately and there are days where I'm just bad and it's like I could keep going and try to reach this arbitrary goal I set, or I can just admit that I'm bad today and move on with my day. And it is so freeing to do that instead of like forcing yourself into doing something.
Yeah, I get that. But then I read an article about, I guess it was Jeff Bridges and his wife, and they said, how have you made it so long in your marriage? And he said, it's simple. Don't give up and don't get divorced. We just work it through.
That's what George Harrison's wife said. They said, what was the secret to your marriage? He said, we never got divorced, even though we could have.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you love and the money will follow. I can't tell you how many speeches I've given to like high school and college kids. And I've said that the new explanation is this can be true, but it also can get you in a lot of trouble. It's possible to make money doing something you're passionate about, but you're still going to have to figure out how. For most people, their passion does not translate magically into money and they end up miserable.
Yeah. What if my passion is laying on the couch watching TV?
Yeah. You're out
of luck. I don't think the money's going to follow.
Can you imagine?
Hopefully that's no one's passion, but you might be right.
Oh, don't be so judgy.
Passion. You know, I would say you can be passionate about it.
Trust your gut. The spirit on this one is empowering, but for most people, anxiety and other issues control their gut, and they end up making decisions that aren't good for them.
I agree with that. I think a lot of times it's like, I know the experts are saying this, but my gut tells me the opposite. And it's like, who am I going to listen to on this one?
That's interesting. Maybe that's an age thing, because I think my gut's pretty good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, not 100% of the time.
I also think it's worth pointing out some people have better guts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think I have a particularly strong one, but I think there are people who have a good instinct, whether it's just you naturally have it or you've honed it over time.
My problem is I'm a really good salesman, and I can sell no one better than myself.
I was going to say,
I'm really good at convincing myself that the right move is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, too.
For the rich out there, if you have everything else in the world, you can get a first-of-its-kind underwater vending machine that dispenses Airheads while submerged in a pool.
I watched a video for this today, and it was well shot.
Yeah.
But WTH. And then they said, okay, well, guess what? We can have home versions, so you can just dump it in your... Because this one was in a big pool. But if you have one in your backyard, you could just dump it in there. And then the neighbors could come over and get Airheads.
Yes. I don't understand. Why would I want to get my hair wet to get an Airhead?
Okay, thank
you. And then
the
Airhead's wet, too.
Yeah, because you're taking it through the pool.
The Airhead was the part that threw me.
Yeah.
Airheads of everything?
All of it, yeah.
And you don't, underwater vending machines in general, it's kind of the dumbest idea of all time.
Yeah, it is. And you don't put in money. You have to do something goofy, and then it'll shoot one out at you. To show you're having fun, Andrew. Show you're having fun.
So, Rach, the Scarlett Johansson thing?
Okay, did I not say when George was in last week
and he
was playing with ChatGPT, I was like, it sounds like Scarlett Johansson.
In the movie.
Well, yeah, in the movie Her, which I actually just recently rewatched. It's an okay movie. Kind of depressing.
Yes.
But it turns out that Sam Altman and ChatGPT or OpenAI had approached Scarlett Johansson in the past about being the voice of ChatGPT-4, and she had declined. So then whenever it came out and it sounds very much like her, she is now publicly rebuking OpenAI and saying, like, I can't believe you did this.
Yeah.
I told you no.
Pretty bad.
And they're trying to say, like, oh, no, it's just a generic voice if there's any sort of...
Would you guys like to be the voice of ChatGPT?
Yep.
I mean, I think it'd be
what?
Cool.
For the money? Just for the fame?
Just for the fun of it, right?
Yeah, it would be kind of fun.
You know, I mean...
I don't know.
I think when it comes to Miss Scojo, I think the cat's out of the bag. If it's not her voice, I mean, if her voice isn't being replicated there, her voice is very easily replicated by any number of other AI programs that are out there.
True.
So if her concern is like, well, what if they make my voice saying something? That technology already exists.
I just think it's kind of skeevy to approach someone and be like, would you like to do this? And they say no, and then you do it anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's extremely skeevy. Yeah.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate it.
Thank you.